$95,000.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go. Second hour of the show. One of the books, two to go, Nick and myself, till four, always includes you guys. So it's a ring full of the boxers. The haymakers have been put to bed, I would hope, and we're all just having discussions, talking about a lot of things, a lot of Astros.
I don't think we should stop all the haymakers being thrown
when at me, they stop. In the chat, it's Clarence's birthday, and he's sitting there like George Foreman, not with the grill. I mean, he's sitting there like, just, yeah, we don't need all that. We're better
than that.
On
his birthday.
Yeah, on his birthday. I love that he's with us. But I don't need him to be fighting. We have a discussion.
I like the shots being thrown at you, though. That's okay.
I guess you're reading with your ass instead of your eyes. If you haven't seen the fact they're picking on you for using the word penis, evidently.
Yeah, I saw what Mega Blast said.
Several others.
I saw what he said. Yeah. But nothing was more funny than all the shots that Charles Barkley took at you yesterday. And if you missed that interview, you should go to ESPN975.com and check out the podcast, because that was fantastic.
Someone said they actually gave me credit for going back at him. I said the biggest, most difficult thing in all of that is I had to keep it above board. Like, the majority of our crap throwing at each other involves stuff that if you said it with the FCC on radio, you'd be in big trouble.
That'd be great, though.
Yeah, it would be phenomenal if it was satellite radio, but I'd still probably, I'd wager a guess, one of us would be rung up for something because we'd still go way over the line. You talk about James Click in that line that he wants to go way over with the tax. We go way over the line when we go at each other.
Let's play a little clip of that.
If you ain't played, you can't beat me. Because number one, you can't hit it out your shadow anyway. I mean, you play old man golf. You hit it by 220 right down the middle. That's not going to work against me.
Just because you put your ass into it doesn't mean it's going any farther than I'm going to hit it.
Yeah. It's going. Wait. You're not going to outdrive me, brother. Let's get that.
Well, see, you got more artificial parts than a model that we used to put together with glue.
Just get the ball to the club head. You can't get my mind. I'm going to hit great shots. Every time I step on the golf course now, my compass is sky high. I dedicated so much time to my long game. I've neglected my short game. So that's all I'm working on right now. But listen, I'm going to beat you, and Bull, I'm going to stomp a mud hole in his ass because he talks so much.
Okay. All right. Here's the thing.
That was fantastic.
Like, and I don't know if it even made it in there when I said that my daughters have never met him, but they appreciate him because he's putting both of them through college because of all the money. I used to call him SI. He's like, what's that, Sports Illustrated? I said, no, secondary income. Because when I was playing before I got married with kids and I had a handicap that was 5.6, I cashed in on a regular basis on him. And so I verified with a lot of my buddies, he's never outdriven me in his life. It's not going to start now. And
I mean, that
he has an artificial hip, two artificial knees.
You're saying that, but no one, we need evidence. Kind of like how you don't believe in Click.
I'll do it for you.
We're going to need it. We're going to need to see some evidence.
You know what I'm going to do? Because even as early as this weekend, I already said I'm going to the driving range, but also last time we did, I did an appearance at a golf, either a Golf Galaxy, and they had the tracker, and I took, it wasn't even my driver. I just took a stock driver that they had sitting there, and I made sure that it was, I hit at least 1-300.
Right. I got to see it to believe it.
That's fine.
I got to see it
just
to believe
it. Just
like
your free throws, right?
That's been proven.
No, it has not. Hasn't even been close to proving.
I just haven't posted
the
video.
In your mind, it's been proven.
I just haven't posted the video. The other thing I like about Charles Barkley is that he hates kids like me.
Yeah, kids coming to my house ain't never going to change. But, you know, my fitness for dogs, I do fly my dogs private. Man, it's expensive putting them on a private jet. But, listen, I don't want kids in my house. I want to be able to drink, have fun, use profanity, and things like that. Leave your badass kids at the house. We can drink tequila, smoke cigars, and have a great time.
It's a smart man. It's a smart man.
I sent him pictures of the kids and the family picture that we took at Christmas and said they're not bad, they're not ugly, and they're waiting for an invitation and need to know when they're going to be coming out to the house. So I'm not done with this, and by any means, and because of the fact that now it's on, I can't tell you all my buddies that were listening to that thing yesterday were like, no, because they've been just begging me to start playing again. I was like, every call yesterday was, well, now you got no excuse. Now we know you're going to start. Oh, yeah, I'm going to the driving range. I'm going to get it going.
All right. Yep. All right. Well, I like that I'm getting you fired up because I really don't care if you can hit it 300, 200, whatever it is. I don't even know what you can hit. I don't care. I just want to get you aggravated. And if Barkley proves himself right, then the world is never going to forget this. They're never going to let it go.
Let me just say this, too. There have been times that he has beaten both me and my buddy Bull. They happened few and far between. But when they did, anyone within three area codes and zip codes knew about it. Like, literally, we would go golf all day, and then we would all go to our houses, respectively, and clean up, and then we would all meet somewhere for dinner. When we walked into said restaurant for dinner, as we know, he likes to project, and he's a loudmouth. As soon as the door of the restaurant opened up, he didn't care what people were doing. He'd start yelling, "Does anybody have any foot cream?" And people, of course, were looking, going, "What the hell does that mean?"
But they're genuinely looking for some foot cream.
Yeah, and he's like, "I need someone to find me a CVS or a Walgreens. I need some foot cream." And we're like, "Here we go." And he goes, "See these two guys right here? I kicked their ass on the golf course so much today. My feet are so sore, I got to get some of that foot cream." And I'm like, "Okay, it's really funny." But at the time, you couldn't argue with him because there was a time that I played golf with him that he didn't have a three-piece swing and he didn't have all the hitches and he didn't have the yips. Now, supposedly, it's all gone.
He says the confidence is through the roof.
So is his weight.
Through the roof, he says.
I should make him walk. If we walked 18 holes,
ceiling is the roof.
His back nine would be atrocious. All right, that was fun. And you know, for everybody that was worried, was it taped? When did you tape? You know, I got all your questions in that I could. We did it on Zoom, so there's going to be a good portion of you can actually see on sportsmap.com when they get done breaking it all up. So we tried to do it and maximize it. I don't like asking him to do it more than like once every 3-4 months, but when he does do it, he gives us an hour as opposed to the 15 minutes or less he gives everybody else. So just appreciate it.
I'll play a few more of those clips because there were so many good things. I mean, he had so many different opinions. He doesn't just talk basketball. We got his take on the Olympics. You got his take on the Astros cheating scandal as well.
Altuve, yep.
Altuve, Dame Lillard, when those discussions were popping off. So, I mean, there's a bunch of relevant stuff. I mean, you can go anywhere in the world with Charles Barkley. That's the cool thing about it. So, yeah, I mean, I appreciated it. That as well. Let's go from one boy to another. Like, we know how cool you and Charles Barkley is. We also know how cool you and the best general manager in basketball is, Rafael Stone.
No, I think that's I actually do believe that's the wrong approach. I think the right approach is to do the work, like work as hard as you can, use every minute, and keep every option open. It's not as simple like. It's still not guaranteed we're picking, or we're picking in that spot. Like, it's more likely than not. It always is. It's very hard to do. The NBA is a very illiquid market. And so you should never bet on any transaction. You should always bet on the status quo. But notwithstanding, it's our job to figure out what possibilities exist. And so if you lock yourselves in, that has real consequences. It locks in your thinking. So I don't do that. I really don't. And so if they said we have to do it in 5 minutes, we would be prepared. We've done the work. We would be prepared. But I don't want to tell you or anybody else it's predetermined. I think that's not the right path for us.
Thoughts, homie.
Did you bring your decoder ring to work today, Nick? Because if you didn't have to listen to all that or you just twisted the ring, all it would basically come out and say, it's like if you shook the magic eight ball after listening to that, what would pop up is, what we're really saying is we don't know what the hell we're going to do yet, okay? But to keep, again, this is where I think that more people should be offended both in the media and as fans. And this is the third time that I can give you specific examples on where he insists on like he's smarter than you. So if he tells you that this should be, then it should be. Now, he's telling you that they've done all the work and he's the smartest guy in the room essentially. But guess what? He hadn't watched a college game all year, okay? He hasn't seen a college game all year. I've got multiple people that went to multiple events, things like that. Forget how I know all that I know. Just trust me. You got three first-round picks. You can't screw it up. So as much as you say, again, to all the Rockets fans and the media out there, look, it's not a science anymore with draft picks. So you can ask any general manager in the league, and a lot of them, they'll say it's luck. And sometimes you hit and sometimes you don't. Guess what? The general managers are saying that just like you are because you're trying to save your job and be here for multiple years. This is a very big year for Rafael Stone. And he better get this draft right, especially at number two. And if you're going to, like he alluded to, if you're thinking about trading the number two pick, it better be up to get one or better be down to get multiple picks, or the player you get better be transitionally franchise-like, or you are going to get annihilated.
If he doesn't make the right move, in your opinion, the following year, is there room for him to bounce back? How much of a leash do you think Rafael Stone actually has with this team in the event this year's draft doesn't go the way it should be?
It's short, Nick. And I've talked to multiple people across the league that said he doesn't have, because he's got such a low-paying contract too, and he doesn't have the Daryl Morey 5 years at $8 million a year type deals that drove Tillman nuts. Tillman's got a built-in scapegoat. If this doesn't go well, wasn't me, it was him. He's out. And whether he elevates Chris Wallace, promotes his son, or goes and gets someone else, he can make the change. Like, Rafael is also, again, when I say that he actually insults your intelligence when he tells you, hey, a lot of you guys in the media said, you know, when should we evaluate the Harden trade? 2027? I'm telling you, you shouldn't evaluate it till 2030. Well, I got news for you, homie. In 2030, when we're evaluating it, whether we liked it or didn't, you're not going to have your job unless you do it between now and 2030. Nothing you say is going to change that. And Tillman, like we said with David Culley, he's a placeholder right now. Both guys are placeholders. There's so much pressure right now on Rafael.
I hope.
Yeah. There's so much pressure on Stone right now because you did get the two pick, because you kept your pick. Now you got to do the right thing with it. Pretty safe to say, Nick, that in the top three, you won't be crucified and criticized for the fact that you take any one of the three, Mobley, Green, or Cade Cunningham.
Right.
But if you start screwing around and trade out of it, And get rid of it.
Try to get cute
because you're believing all the smoke screens and you got to get to number one and you give up a pick or two that could help you. Now you're walking on some very, very dangerous turf. So be aware of that. So there's the latest with your Rockets as it relates to the draft, which is coming up, I think, was it the 29th? It's coming up right around the corner. So we can continue to talk about Rockets draft at some point if you guys want to get into it. We've talked Astros. We've got other things we can get into. But, hey, it always involves you. 713-780-3776.
November 18th.
No. NBA draft, sir.
Oh, NBA draft.
Yeah, NBA draft. Yeah. I think it's the 29th. But we've got lots more to get to, so just continue to keep boxing with us. It's the Press Box ESPN.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back as we roll through our number two three-hour program. It is indeed The Press Box on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. There is a lot of discussions on a lot of platforms, and we love that. That means you guys are engaging in the program, and we are kicking around a lot of different topics. We talked a lot about the Astros. A lot of people still talking about the fact. And look, our buddy, the beer man, Greg, makes a point that I completely agree with in this scenario, which is when you're this close and you're in go-for-it mode, you got to do what you got to do. You got to go for it no matter what. Now, I will always hold true that the one that I would have never done, and I said this at the time, and I'll say it again, I never would have given up Bregman to get Chris Sale. There was just too much that said Bregman was going to be that guy, that kind of it factor guy. And so far, and we wouldn't have known that Sale was going to get hurt either. However, when you look at the Verlander trade, and even if it was Daz Cameron and the other two guys, and they're on the big league roster right now for Detroit, you're not missing them. And it didn't change. It wouldn't have changed your game plan one way or another if you had them now. Because guess what? It would have changed the game plan back then, and you probably wouldn't have won the World Series if you didn't have Justin Verlander. So it was worth doing. The Greinke move, to me, you made it to Game 7 of the World Series. And by the way, and I didn't see this coming, and I had my doubts when he took the mound for Game 7, he gave you everything he had and probably better than almost anybody else you could have put in that position, said minus Cole or Verlander, and they obviously couldn't pitch, except for in relief, which didn't happen. But my point being, you got so much out of Greinke, it was worth doing, and if Seth Beer turns out to be a big-time prospect for the Diamondbacks, so be it. That doesn't mean they're going to win a World Series or get to a Game 7, and you did. So when the window's open and the opportunity is there to seize it, you got to go for it. And I'm in complete go-for-it mode right now for this team. But I think bullpen is essential. And I wouldn't have said this maybe 3 weeks ago, Nick, but I'll say it now, that I have a concern about an ace. I have a concern about the top of the rotation because, for whatever reason, Fromber's fallen off.
Yeah. I mean, look, and that's another thing when you couple, when you add that to what we've been saying about Greinke, the fact that Greinke is considered an ace and yet we need some sort of insurance policy in the event he gets touched. I mean, I think it is. Look, maybe pitching is not as good as we think it is. Look, I don't think it's as bad as we make it out to be, but the bullpen, certainly, I don't think we've exaggerated that. So, I look, they'll address it, man. I think they'll address it. And look, I would love a real starter, a real ace to be added to the rotation, because I think that would do great things.
Now, if it's not Scherzer, is there anybody? I haven't really seen who's out there, who's not. I don't know that there's anybody out there.
Well, there's a lot. I saw a piece either by CBS or Bleacher Report listing 25 names that could be available or potentially.
But there's a huge difference, Nick, between a starter and an ace, right? So a proven horse that is going to, you know, the Garrett Cole, the Justin Verlander. Greinke used to be that guy. He's not that guy anymore. A Trevor Bauer. You know, you go amongst the top pitchers in baseball, and you know that there are certain guys that are bona fide aces. Most of those guys aren't available.
Yeah. Trevor Story, Chris Bryant, Max Scherzer are like the three biggest names.
Those are two position
Kyle
players.
Kyle Gibson. I'm talking just name, okay, strictly on name recognition now. Kyle Gibson. And then Pablo Lopez. Those are the first five that I see on this list.
If I said Kyle Gibson or Pablo Lopez is there for you, I think most people are going to like, who?
Gibson, though? You don't like Gibson?
I like him, but I don't know if he's a flash in the pan or if he's got staying power. And I don't know that, for as good as he's been this year, I don't know that if I put him on the mound in Game 7 of a playoff series or in a must-win situation, that he's going to bring it and do what the guys, you know, the Verlanders and the Coles. And
with that thought process, you're basically saying Max Scherzer. But
that's what I was going to ask you. I don't think that even of the teams that are selling, they're selling an asset with an ace reputation like a Scherzer.
You're probably right. You're probably right. But there's a long list of names on this particular list. Craig Kimbrell was something we mentioned. Yeah. He was a bigger name or a bigger discussion before the Max Scherzer one. That was probably, 2 weeks ago? Outside of that, I mean, I don't really see any big names.
And again, I'm okay.
Or aces.
I don't have to have a closer because Presley can be that guy, and he's proven that. But I need the guys behind whoever's closing to be better. And look, Stanek looks like he's kind of getting it back again, but he's had some blips. But overall, we know what we saw, just short sample size, just last night alone. We know whether it's Austin Pruitt or Brian Abreu. If they're doing what they're doing and faltering the way they're faltering now, are you really telling me in the playoffs it's going to get better, not worse?
No, it's probably going to get worse because of the intensity. And all odds, I would imagine it gets worse.
So my concern is the bullpen first, but I think that, again, to get back to our initial question to start the show, I'm not worried about a bat. I'm worried about if they are going to do what they said they're going to do and go way over, then I'm going after Scherzer. And I'm going to do whatever I need to do so that I don't care if the Red Sox add Sale. I don't care you know, who, if the White Sox had the two guys. And Clarence and I were talking about this during a break. The bigger thing to me is what you take those last two games of the White Sox series in Chicago. You had four or five total hits. I think it was four hits over two games. You ran into two extremely good pitchers. If you're the Astros in a playoff series and you know that Giolito and Rondon are going to be the two guys going at you, do you feel confident the two guys you put up against them are going to be on a level with that? And if the answer is no, then there's the answer to your
question. Particularly Rondon. Rondon has been... Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I can see that, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. They're, no. I think they're in a much better position than a lot of these other teams that want to make moves and be significantly better as opposed to just a little bit better. Because you look at the Houston Astros, they just need to get a little bit better. The bullpen, a lot better, but as a team overall, they just need to get a little bit better. They don't need to get significantly better. So, but, yeah.
Yeah, so I think are you on the same page as me, though, that if they're going to go anything other than bullpen, I'm starting with an ace or a big time starter?
I'm okay with a big time. Yeah, like it doesn't have to be an ace. It doesn't have to be a Max Scherzer in my world. It just doesn't. I mean, a lot of the names that are possibilities that are not quite aces are a lot of times, at least on the list that I'm seeing, they're names of people players that I don't think teams necessarily want to give up on. Or it's a situation where it's like, we're not trying to give up on this player, but if you wow me, I'll give up on this player. That's what I feel like. No one's really super motivated to give up on. And then with the Max Scherzer thing, remember, he has a no-trade clause. Does he even want to play in Houston?
That's a bigger question, too.
That's a massive, massive question. So
that's why I asked the question. If it's not Scherzer, is there anyone ace quality? Look how they found Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole wasn't a guy that everybody was knocking down the door for, knowing he was going to turn out how he turned out once he got to Houston. Same thing with Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton wasn't an ace, but he was so far above just being good that when the trade was made, everybody's like, who? Why would we need him? Who, you know, what is he going to bring to the table? And then he's Charlie F. and Morton.
Yeah.
So if there's either that kind of guy or there is a big-time ace kind of guy, it seems like for all the shortstops that are going to be on free agent market, for all the bats that are going to be available before the deadline, it doesn't seem like there's a surplus of the big-time starters that teams are going to chase and pursue. So,
all right, on the other side, I want to talk a little bit about that whole Deion Sanders situation. He walked out on a press conference because the way he was addressed. And he said he wants you to address him like Nick Saban, like you would address Nick Saban. So we'll talk about that and what Nick Saban himself
had
to say about
it. Good, if you got the Nick part of it too, I like that. Good, outstanding. Because someone hammered me on Twitter the fact that we brought that up and said that we shouldn't be that mean to Deion. But they used other terms.
Well, I hope he tunes out of this segment.
There you go. Second half of the show comes up next. Don't go anywhere. It's Press Box ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, back on the box. 90 in, 90 to go. Nick and I for the rest of the show up until 4. So, Nick wants to get into some Nick.
I do.
Nick, what do you prefer to be called, Nick?
Going forward, you're going to address me as producer because I'm not going to be...
Can I just call you Prod or P?
Sure. Why not?
Can I call you P-Boy?
No, you cannot call me P-Boy under any circumstances.
Well, you said you want to be called producer. I mean, producer starts with a P. Hey, P-Boy.
That doesn't mean you can abbreviate.
Some audio here?
No, that's not how it works. But Deion Sanders walked out of a press conference on Media Day because he didn't like the way he was addressed. He was addressed by his first name. And the reporter was being a little bit of a smartass because he kind of doubled down on calling him Deion after Deion was upset with it, but it did sound something like this.
You're up.
Hey, Deion, I was just wondering if you could...
Hold on, let's back up a little bit. You don't call Nick Saban Nick. Don't call me Deion now, okay?
I call Nick Saban Nick.
No, you don't. That's a lie. If you call Nick Nick, you know you'll get cussed out on the spot. So don't do that to me. Treat me like Nick.
Okay, Deion. All right. Just
So he called him Dion a second time after he told him not to. And
the
then
guy
Dion
coming at
walked
me on
out.
Twitter said because he called him the second time that I was being unfair to Dion.
No, that's not. No. I mean, your name is Dion. He got addressed by his first name. If you wanted to be addressed in a certain way, it is on you to make that clear from the get-go. And that's basically what Nick Saban was trying to say when he was asked about it.
There's been some talk in the college football world about how we should address head coaches. If it was up to you, what is your preference? Is it Nick, head coach Nick? Nick, how would you like to be addressed?
Look, I respond to just about anything, and I've been called just about everything. So, not something that's really important to me, but I think everybody should have the opportunity to sort of create or make the way their expectation is of how they get addressed, and it's not something that's really that significant to me.
Not to mention, Dion, you're not accomplished in the college football world like Nick for you to say, treat me like Nick. You get what I'm saying?
Right, like, for sure. It's like the difference between someone going at Bill Belichick, and I think even Bill Belichick's okay with being called Bill at a press conference, but it's like going to Bill Belichick and saying, hey, Bill, as opposed to going to Matt LaFleur and saying, hey, Matt. Right? I mean, Matt LaFleur doesn't have the resume of Bill Belichick. So if anybody's going to be offended, it's Belichick because he's been there, done it, and done it for a long time and has the track record. LaFleur's not dumb enough to come in from the day he gets the job and start. And that's kind of getting back to Nick, to the segment we did before the end of the first half of the program. Rafael Stone, the thing that I get so irked about is you don't have the resume, the accomplishments, or anybody's belief that you should be talking down to everybody the way you talk down to them and telling them how long of a leash you should have and when you should be judged and what, you know, and how this process works to where it would be unfair to say that if you screw this draft up, it's on you, it's all luck. It shouldn't be.
No, if he's talking down to anybody, then that's on him. And see, that's exactly what Deion Sanders
exactly
did.
Where I'm going with
he this. He was talking down to him in a sense, and I think the guy was like, I didn't do anything wrong, so I'm doubling down. Here's the reason why it's a bad look for Deion Sanders, because he's going to have to go back and address the media again. And that guy, that reporter, is not going to lose his job for addressing him by his first name. It's just stupid. So he's going to have to go back. Not only is he going to have to address the media, most probably he's going to have to face that guy again too. So it's a bad look because the guy didn't go anywhere because he did nothing wrong. And here you are walking out of a media day. And let's be real, if it wasn't for you, no one would be paying attention to that college football program. Why would you walk out on a media day?
And the thing is, you're bringing it up saying, hey, if you did this to Nick Saban, and Nick Saban's saying, no, that's not true. And reporters across the country are saying, I've called Nick for years.
Yeah.
Never had
Why
a problem.
Why would he lie about that?
And the other thing, Nick, is like, if you do have a problem with this, it should have been from your, and it's in college, it's the sports information department. In pro sports, it's your PR department. Someone should have addressed it from the day they got the job and said, similar to what the Astros did with us when we had A.J. Hinch on. He doesn't want to be called coach ever. He prefers skipper, the manager, but he believes that this is the way, because anybody could be a coach. He is a manager. Fair enough, but you've told us. If Dion from day one says, this is how I want to be addressed, and it's obviously would have come up way before this first SWAC media day, because of the fact that there's reporters covering practices and other things, that someone from the sports information department would have said, going forward, Coach Sanders would like to be referred to as either coach.
Which would be a bold and vain move in itself, which would be bad, okay?
But it wouldn't be out of the realm for Dion, because he is a very vain and very egotistical guy.
And that's the other thing. That's what I'm worried about. He's there for attention. Deion Sanders loves the attention. But prior to getting this gig, it almost was necessary for him to attract attention to himself, right? We're in the vanity industry. Like, we have to kind of be vain. He's being a part of all these NFL broadcasts and has actually played the game. He's a bit of an attention whore, and we know this, and that's kind of his job. Mm-hmm. In this particular case, you're the head coach, and a big part of this is about the kids. So, in a lot of ways, Deion Sanders is already taking a certain amount of attention away from these kids, just him being there. Don't make this about yourself. This is the second incident now. Don't forget about the other incident where he thought something was stolen, and he opened it up with the press conference saying something was stolen, and then it turned out it was just quote-unquote misplaced. They were obviously getting his back. That's the second bad look, in my opinion, on Deion Sanders since he's taken over at that program.
The other thing is, to all that you've just said, the other thing that has to be factored in is like what happened between Cassidy Hubbard and Michael Malone, the coach of the Nuggets, which I talked when we talked all about this yesterday. One way or another, the wrong time to correct it is live on air or during a press conference with a room full or a Zoom chat full of other reporters. Let it go for the time being. Then after the conference is over or immediately after the question is asked, whether your SID person steps in or after it, you go to that person and anybody else, and then you send out a statement. This is what coach would like to be referred to. It's not unheard of. It's what the PR and communication staffs are there for. But at least it avoids, like in Cassidy Hubbard's situation, you're doing a taped but live on the court as it happened between during a timeout in an NBA game, and you say, Mike, during the first quarter, are you happy with what you got out of the joke? Whatever the question was. And he went, it's Michael.
Yeah.
And it got awkward.
And he apologized afterwards because he knew he came off as a D-bag, rightfully so. And I think to Malika's defense, what is the big thing about
Cassidy Hubbard?
I mean, excuse me, Cassidy's defense. What's the big thing about being a reporter, particularly a sideline or on-the-court reporter? They have a certain amount of questions. They got to be quick and they got to be concise. So when someone's name is Michael, I could see how a reporter or a sideline reporter, just to be concise and quick and kind of abbreviate the name, called him Mike without even realizing that that made it. Like, that's probably what happened because they got to be quick and concise. Like with the Houston Rockets, the AT&T sports guys, I think they were capped at three questions. It might have been two.
Sideline report questions in game, because when I was director of broadcasting, they were very specific about these are the rules. And from what they tell the PR department is, because Coach Popovich, you can obviously tell, but Pop was adamant he didn't want to do it. And he got outvoted, and it was going to happen, which meant everybody had to do it, but they didn't have to be happy about it. So that's why he's crotchety. But he also realizes, I only got two. So a lot of times, remember, when he got snarky and gave you a one-word answer, he knew no matter what happens, there's only one more to answer. And if he does the same thing twice, he did it. It's like Marshawn Lynch. I'm here so I don't get fined. He did it. You got your two questions answered, and I'm going back to coaching because I don't want to do this.
Yeah, it's a bad move on his part. I didn't like the way he did it. I mean, a lot of people got a kick out of it. See, he's cool, like the way he messed with that one reporter about his questions, and it really wasn't bad questions, and he made him restart the interview basically three times. Like, I don't think that was that funny. I don't think that makes Greg Popovich. Again, though, I'm not a big fan of Pop. I'm kind of a Pop hater, to be honest with you. And I don't even hate the Spurs. I'm just not a big fan of Pop. At least you used to be able to say we're a winning team. You can't even say that about your team anymore.
The other thing you got to be careful, Nick, because you know this. Part of it is you got to know your audience. You got to know who your interviewer, who the interviewee is, right? So if I'm interviewing Pop and I know he's crotchety, then I'm not going to give him any room to have anything he can attack. So when we talked about Malika talking to Coach Budenholzer and calling him Bud, I understand you might have a relationship. One, it doesn't really sound right on the air because you're supposed to be an objective reporter. You're not supposed to show the world your buddies. But also, you're setting yourself up. If he's in a bad moment, it's a bad look to call him by his nickname.
I'm with you on that, but I agreed with you on that yesterday, too, because I think that's – look, and he didn't even make a big deal of it, but
– but with a Popovich, you got to know that – it's hard to overthink it, but you got to know there's certain things that I bring up that he's going to attack on, and he's not going to answer my question. He's going to attack me.
Yeah. I mean, I've asked Popovich – I've only asked one question to Popovich my entire career, and it was basically getting his thoughts on Ginobili coming off of an injury. He's like, I saw 15 minutes. What do you want me to say? I'm like, tell me what you thought in the 15 minutes that you saw him.
Right.
Greg Popovich, how about that? He's been gone for weeks. He's a key player on your team. How about that? But that's just the way it is. Shannon wants to get on the Deion Sanders situation. Shannon, you're on the press box.
Hey, guys, what's going on? Not quite the same, but bring you back a few years to one of the best presses ever with Mike Gundy when he was like saying, I'm a man. I'm 40. And that was one of the best ones I think a coach could do at a presser to, I guess, bring his point home that he wanted to be in control of the press conference. And I'll see if I can get your take on that.
Yeah, no.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, and there's multiple other ones, too. Bob Hill was a guy that I always remember, Nick, when he was the coach of the Spurs. He was a guy that wanted to go at you right away because he felt like if he could intimidate you from the get-go, you'd probably be like his, for lack of you know a term I would like to use, but his, you'd be under his beck and call going forward, right? Like you would succumb to whatever he brought to the table. So the first thing he would do if I asked a question of him was come at me 100 miles an hour. Why do you ask that? What do you think? And I'd say, well, I think right now that your off-ball defense and your rotations suck. So what do you think about changing your defense? And then he'd be like, well, honestly, you're probably right. Because now I showed him I'm not backing down.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to offend you.
Right.
But I am trying to get an answer to my question, which is valid.
Right. And when you back down, you can't just back down just for the sake of not backing down. You have to have substance. So if you actually know what you're talking about when you're not backing down, then I think it helps your cause.
Yeah.
But Mike Gundy's going off like that was fantastic.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
He'll never act like that in a presser. Although he has continued to do dumb stuff even after that presser, because that's probably, what, 8 years old probably? Maybe seven?
Yeah, it's quite a ways away. And here's the other thing. Nick, someone texted this in. They said, as a kid, I always knew Dion as simply Dion. If I were to meet him, I'd probably address him as that as well. We all knew him as a player and a personality before we knew him as a coach. And it behooves you to ask the question. Because you're now a coach, does that change everything else to where you have to be addressed a certain way? Because I'll take it a step further. Dion himself referred to himself in the third person and had others referred to him as Prime.
Yeah, see.
You go tell Prime that? Prime says Prime, all right? No one's calling you Prime. That's a nickname.
Yeah, and that's why it's a bad look for Deion Sanders. It's going to be awkward when he has to circle back and see that guy again. Because how is he going to address him now?
Well, remember in OKC, what was the beat writer for that went at it with Russ? Westbrook?
Yeah.
The next days had to be awkward as hell because Russ attacked him. He went back. They went back and forth. And then that was the end of the press conference. But everybody's got a job to do. Russ is showing up for the game or the practice the next day. The reporter's showing up to cover the team. He's not getting yanked off the beat because Russ got irritated.
Right.
You're going to see him. Now how's it going to go?
Yeah. That's just weird. And look, this is obviously a first-time coaching job for Deion Sanders, so I think he's learning. Mm-hmm. But his outgoing personality may make him look bad in some of these situations. You have to understand, not your program now, that college program that you're coaching now, Deion, has a lot more eyeballs looking at it right now as opposed to before. So now it's like, what is he going to do next? Now everybody who's covering that team is like, how's he going to pop off next? How is he going to make something a cringeworthy situation again? That's what they're looking at now.
So no, you're right. There's going to be copycatters now. Everybody else is going to call him Deion too. And see how far he takes it. And if you're Deion, don't you want to be known more about turning around a program and making it prominent and doing things on the field as opposed to someone stole my wallet and you called me Deion as your first two notable moments?
Yeah.
Not a good look. All right, we got lots more to get to. Second hour of the show's got one more segment in it. Then we got a third to go on top of that. So plenty of time for you guys to join in and be a part of the program. 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. That's calls and texts. Otherwise, it's Twitch and Twitter. He's Nick. I'm Joel with the Press Box. He's
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, final segment of hour number 2, 3-hour program. We call it the Press Box, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. He's Nick, I'm Joel, covering the gamut, running the top to bottoms, the ones and the twos, as Fred Davis likes to say, about everything going
and
on.
And threes. Sports.
That's if you're on the threes. So Astros off today. Rangers in for the final series of the boot, I believe.
You think they're going to lose this series because you think they lose to all the bad teams. No, that's what you're going to say.
I don't think they play very – I think they play to the level of their competition, and I'm disappointed.
You think James Click sucks? You think he's not going to make any moves?
Let me know when you're done putting words into my mouth.
Okay.
It's frustrating, right? I want them to do better and be better. I think they play to the level of their competition. I think the fact that when you and I have talked about this every time it's happened, and it's happened multiple times, that they've gotten swept by a, can I dare say this, I'll say a pee-poor team. They've been swept by three pee-poor teams. Okay? That's not something, that's not something on the resume of a World Series champion or champion caliber
Shouldn't be
team.
Proud of that, no.
Right? Orioles? No. Tigers?
Come on,
no.
Son.
Rangers? No. Shouldn't happen. Especially when you're kicking the crap out of teams that are really good. And your record is better than any other team on teams above 500. So it concerns me. Now, you just handled the Indians again. You lost one game all year to the Indians. You won the season series in dominating fashion against the White Sox, who look like your top rivals in the American League, and the Red Sox, another top rival in the American League. So I'm not worried about you against those teams, although those two pitching performances in the White Sox series do have me a tad bit concerned.
Yeah.
But I look at this, and everybody's throwing out names, because Berrios could be a name the Twins could be selling. Berrios is a guy that I would feel more fits that kind of close to an ace, more like a Gerrit Cole on the rise kind of guy than I would some of the other guys that have been mentioned. The room for error right now, Nick, is so slim because there's five teams that are sitting there within a game or two of each other. In the A's case, the furthest of any of the teams that are away from the Astros is three with the A's. That your room for error, your margins are so slim that you've got to be on point, which means when you're playing teams you should beat, you beat them. And when you have opportunities to go get players that can help you, you get them. And I don't want, just like I don't want teams that are in that bunch going out and outdoing and outbidding the Astros for key players that could help, I don't want the Astros to have the A's right on their tail or to start trailing the A's like they did for most of the first half because of the fact that they're losing to teams they should beat.
Well, the year they won the World Series, weren't they considered a somewhat of a bad team, road team?
I don't recall.
I don't remember what they were on the road in 2017, but it does make you wonder because they have been successful despite having struggles on the road. Would you rather have struggles on the road or just struggles against bad teams? And I think maybe just struggling against bad teams would be
natural to struggle on the road. It's not natural to struggle against teams that are in complete suck mode.
But if you're still have a decent win loss record and you're struggling against bad teams as opposed to not necessarily struggling on the road, I don't think you go into the postseason absolutely hating that situation. You get what I'm saying? Because in all likelihood, those poor teams are not going to be in the postseason.
But you know? Nick, if you're the Bucks, or if you're the Nets, or you're the Lakers, okay? Are you more concerned because you lost multiple games to the Cavaliers or the Pistons, or are you concerned because you lost a few games on the road? Because to my point, I'm more the road woes happen. You know, you're in the enemy environment, the crowd, the momentum. A lot of those things can affect you. And it can be an issue. But if you're going out there and you know on paper your nine is way better, not just close, your nine is way better than their nine, and you're getting manhandled, not just a game because that can happen. We saw it last night. But you're getting swept in a 3 or 4 game series. That's a huge difference to me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel a little bit okay with having a decent record if you're struggling against bad teams, but I do see your point, like the reference you just made about the Pistons. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to be said about that because it does make you wonder that these bad teams that you're losing to expose some of the mistakes that you're having in later on, and maybe good teams can capitalize that, or maybe a team that's really high on video film analytics, that really good about studying their team, and then say, you know what? Even the Tigers had success doing this. Why don't we try this and then they expose a vulnerability. I can totally see that. But, you know, that's just, that's basically saying, you know, the film that you have going up against bad teams is going to be used against you, which is possible. I just don't, you know.
It's like trends, right? So from a trend perspective, it's good. You can lose a game. It can happen. You know what? All your guys went out the night before, and you're supposed to beat the Pistons or the Cavs, but everybody was in Miami last night till 5 in the morning, and they were at the booby trap, and they didn't play their best game. But if you lose a minimum of three straight games in a row to a team that's putting up a just far inferior lineup, I would send more than flares and red flags. I'd say I'd be deeply concerned, as opposed to saying, you know what, we've been on a hot streak playing great at home, but we went on the road and we ran into a buzzsaw and we lost a couple series to the Dodgers and the Giants. But, oh, by the way, the Giants have the best record in the National League, and the Dodgers are obviously right there.
Yeah, and based on what you just said, I guess that would mean you have a lot more homework to do in the event you're the general manager or you're James Click, right? Because if you're being exposed like that, like the way you're saying, that means you need to be forced to making more roster adjustments as opposed to just maybe a couple.
But if it is what you said, right? If it's adjustments, if it's like a shift versus a non-shift versus how they're pitching a certain hitter. But if it's the fact that you can't put your finger on it because it's not about like technicalities, it's about your guys just couldn't get a hit, right? And you got 1, 2, 3, 4 hits in a game, but yet a bad team was lighting up your pitching staff, or, you know, whatever the case may be, when you lost a series and got dominated, and you can't put your finger and say, we got dominated because of this, because in every game it might be different.
Right.
No. That's when I would be more concerned.
Yeah. All right. No, I totally understand what you're saying. All right, before you talk about Frankie's, one of the best wide receivers in the game, a former Houston Texan, DeAndre Hopkins, is considering leaving the game. I'll tell you why.
That's in the juicy. Third hour. I see a tweet from him. Good Lord. All right, lots more to get to, as Nick said. Two in the books, one to go, final hour of the show, right around the corner. Coming up next, before we do that, got to tell you about the good people at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. If you haven't heard of it, you need to. If you haven't been there, you got to get there. Because I'm telling you, I've been there, and I've sampled just about everything on the menu, and it is worth every single thing on the menu. Everything you want. It's all fresh. It's all Italian food. It's all the best. Because you walk in, and if you brought your family, you realize that it's like feeling like you're in a very comfortable, homey situation. Everybody can spread out. Everybody can smell all the cooking in the air and know how good it smells. They used to be a pizza place, and their pizza's phenomenal, but they wanted people to know that there's so much more than pizza, and through word of mouth, everybody knows that they got the oven, they got the ingredients, and their pizza is top-notch. But they also want you to know that it could be lasagna, it could be beef stroganoff, it could be any kind of Italian dishes, or it could be wings. They have all those things and more. Chris Smith, the owner, he not only owns the place, he goes into that kitchen and he makes this food for you. And he uses all fresh vegetables, cheese from Wisconsin. They make the Italian sausage in College Station. And he gets it all in so that it's fresh and ready to go when he makes whatever he makes. And whatever you order, you're going to leave that place full as you can be, knowing you got the best Italian food that you could have asked for. Check them out today, frankiesitaliankitchentx.com. And I'm encouraging you to go stop by and try it for yourself, because you're going to be glad you did. If you're in the West Katy, Fulcher, Richmond area, and there are lots of people in that area that are starving literally for good Italian food, you got to get to Frankie's. Because if you go to a Frankie's Italian Kitchen once, you'll be there multiple times. It's great food in that area. Check them out today, frankiesitaliankitchentx.com.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!